We often hear about, you know, the marathon of selling a house, all the showings, the negotiations, just the endless waiting sometimes.
Yeah, it can really drag on.
But what if there was a strategic playbook? Something that not only moved your home in like record time, but also maximized your profit, even if some of the ideas felt completely, well, counterintuitive.
It's a really fascinating approach.
Yeah.
It really pivots on leveraging some deep psychological insights and, meticulous execution. It's not just listing and hoping.
Right. And that's the core of our deep dive today. We're unpacking a really powerful home selling strategy.
Yeah.
And it's not just theory. It's distilled from this insightful YouTube video transcript we found. It features a real estate expert, over a decade of experience, and crucially, a homeowner, Karen, who actually put this whole play, as they call it, into action. And the results were, well, pretty stunning.
Okay, I'm intrigued. So our mission today is basically dissecting these specific steps, right? The ones that make up this rapid sales strategy.
Exactly. We want to reveal the psychology behind it, the precise execution needed to get a home under contract in like 72 hours.
Wow. 72 hours.
Yeah. So get ready for some, potential aha moments about how homes are really sold sometimes.
All right, let's do it. Where do we start?
So let's start with some, let's call them unmovable truths about home sales. When a house isn't selling, there are really only like three fundamental reasons.
Right. It almost always comes down to condition, price, and location. Those are kind of the big three obstacles.
Okay. And what can a seller actually control there?
Well, location.
Yeah.
That's immutable, right? You can't exactly pick up your house and move it across town.
Right.
But price is often seen as the ultimate lever. The saying is price can fix everything. And then there's condition. That means, how updated is the home? Is there deferred maintenance? That's your third critical lever you can pull.
That's a really crucial distinction. Understanding what you can and cannot control, that seems like step zero, right? Before any strategy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you need to know what levers you've got before you can even think about how to pull them effectively.
Okay, and this brings us to something I found really interesting, the emotional side of smart pricing. Our source, Karen, the homeowner, she's actually a licensed agent, 13 years in the business, husband's in construction.
And so she knows her stuff.
Totally. But even for her, the decision to price below what they thought was market value, she had described it as terrifying. How does that paradox work? Pricing low to get more.
Well, it taps into a really primal human thing, that fear of missing out, right?
Right.
FOMO.
Right.
The paradox is the goal of pricing it low isn't to get that low price. It's actually to achieve a higher sale price than you might have even wanted initially.
Oh.
By listing it below that perceived market value, you create this rush, this sense of immediate opportunity,
Yeah.
and that drives intense competition among buyers.
And Karen's experience really drove that home, the emotional difficulty. Even knowing the strategy, she admitted it was just hard to separate emotion from such a massive financial decision.
Oh, absolutely. It really underscores how essential strong client trust is. And having that social proof, seeing it work for others, helps guide sellers through what is, let's face it, an emotionally tough process.
Yeah, you need that agent's conviction.
That conviction from the agent is absolutely paramount. It lets the seller push past that initial fear, and really commit to the process, trusting that the strategy is going to pay off.
That conviction must be absolutely essential when you're asking a client to do something as intense as phase one, precision staging, the show house transformation.
Oh, yeah.
The source describes just an extreme level of cleaning. We're talking 3 weeks worth of cleaning, everything pristine, every grout line wiped out, everything scrubbed, every single window,
Yeah.
even scrubbing an unfinished basement. What is the point of that level of like obsessive cleaning?
Well, that meticulousness, it immediately gives buyers this sort of subliminal feeling that the homeowners took incredible care of the property. It sets this positive tone before they even notice specific features. It makes them wonder, wow, does someone even live here?
Huh. Right. And it's not just clean, is it? It's depersonalization, minimalism.
Exactly. The goal is that new construction show house vibe.
Yeah.
You remove all the personal stuff, you declutter everything, and this is key. You get rid of oversized furniture
Why the furniture?
because you want rooms to look much bigger. Oversized pieces, they just shrink the space visually and distract the buyer's eye. Any visual clutter, any personal items, they can stop a buyer from picturing themselves living there.
What I thought was brilliant, though, is that the source shows this doesn't have to cost a fortune.
Right.
Karen mentioned like raiding friends' storage units for tiny things, two photographs, three planters, two magazines for $50 worth of items.
Uh-huh.
Resourceful. Totally. They didn't buy new furniture. They just moved existing pieces. Swapped a massive sectional sofa for two little pieces, a huge dining room table for a tiny little baby table from an office. Used Facebook Marketplace, that kind of thing.
That's classic resourcefulness.
Yeah.
The point isn't to spend a ton of money. It's to make really strategic, high-impact visual changes. Minimum cost, maximum effect.
The challenge, though, homeowners often can't see their own place objectively, can they?
Nope. We all get used to our own spaces, our own clutter, our own, you know, personal touches. It's hard to see with fresh eyes.
So what's the fix for that when the seller just can't see it?
The solution is usually bringing in a professional stager, someone with an itemized room-by-room checklist. And this list gets super detailed all the way to the baseboards, every windowsill.
That's objective.
Exactly. It makes it an objective, actionable plan, not just personal criticism. Karen's experience showed this seller's initially resisted changing things like doorknob colors.
Yeah.
But later they totally got it because they thought the impact became advocates.
It's like a scientific approach to staging. And for listeners, the source actually suggested a neat hack using AI, like ChatGPT. They called it ChadPT, kind of funny.
ChadPT, okay.
To generate a general staging checklist. Then you can just edit and personalize it.
That's smart. Yeah, takes the emotion out and gives you a clear roadmap. Actionable steps.
Okay, let's move to phase two. Strategic photography, where less is more.
Ah, yes. This one's interesting.
The guiding principle seems to be, why buy this house? Meaning those first three or four photos, the thumbnails you see online, they have to answer that question instantly.
Absolutely. Those first images are like gatekeepers, aren't they? They decide if someone clicks for more or just keeps scrolling.
And the rules for these photos are super specific. Like only one exterior photo, cropped really tight so you don't see neighbors, even if it cuts off the top of the house.
Right. Focus.
And every interior photo has to sell that specific room. No showing multiple other rooms. So like careful cropping to avoid distractions, cropping a loft out of a family room shot or an accent wall from a dining room photo.
The whole idea is to focus the buyer's eye on the most appealing parts of that specific space.
Yeah.
You don't want to confuse them or give them any subtle reasons to mentally check out.
Which leads to this really counterintuitive photo count. The source argues against using, like, the 100 photos Zillow allows. They suggest a limit of maybe 15 to 20 total. Why so few?
Okay, so this ties into what they call the sell it twice concept.
Sell it twice?
Yeah. First, you sell the house online enough to get buyers to the property. Then you sell it in person.
Ah, I see.
If you show absolutely everything in photos up front, you're basically giving buyers every opportunity to find a reason not to come see the house. Karen apparently even refused requests for more pictures, sticking to this principle.
So you want to create some intrigue, right? Not satisfy all their curiosity before they even get there.
Precisely. Leave them wanting more.
And there was a fun detail here. They used AI, ChadPT again.
Right, Chad's busy.
To green the grass in the photos. And the anecdote is, buyers never even noticed or complained.
Well, it's a subtle tweak, isn't it? It just adds to that overall pristine, well-maintained impression. It's about presenting the best possible yet still attainable version of the place without, you know, being dishonest.
Okay, this next phase, phase three, this is often the real emotional gut punch for sellers, the pricing paradox. Undervaluing for over-delivery.
Yeah, this is the tough one.
The example was Karen's house, listed at $425,000. But her expectations were more like $459,000, maybe even $525,000. That must have been incredibly hard for her.
It's one of the hardest conversations for an agent, no doubt.
Yeah.
Especially when sellers truly feel their home is worth more. But like we discussed, this whole strategy hinges on generating massive buyer competition and that perceived value.
To really illustrate this, the source used a great analogy. The Barrett-Jackson car auction. Remember that Mustang bullet?
Yeah.
Listed initially at $2 million.
Yeah.
It ultimately sold for $36 million.
Wow. Okay, that makes the point.
Right. It just beautifully shows how a strategically low initial price can drive insane competition and a much, much higher final sale price.
It's that reserve price mentality, really. The low starting price isn't the real price. It's a marketing tactic. Mm-hmm. It's designed to flood the market with interested buyers, knowing full well that the seller's acceptable minimum, their actual reserve, is way higher than that starting point.
So it's not about accepting the low number. It's about creating a frenzy that pushes the final price potentially way beyond even those initial expectations.
Exactly. You're harnessing the power of perceived demand and that buyer's fear of missing out. big time.
Which brings us neatly to phase four, orchestrating urgency, the open house phenomenon.
Right, making it happen.
This involves really precise timing, going live, say, Thursday at noon, but crucially, not allowing any showings until the open house on Saturday.
That blackout period, it's absolutely critical. It built anticipation. The source mentioned the agent's phone just blowing up, people begging to come in. It creates this immense pent-up demand by the time Saturday rolls around.
You're basically building a funnel, aren't you? Channeling all that built-up interest into one concentrated showing period.
Yeah, exactly.
And the power of perceived competition is huge here. The goal is cramming as many people as possible into that open house. Think people lining up 20 minutes early, a line around the street, maybe five families inside consistently.
Mm-hmm.
They had 22 families, like 60 people total.
Wow.
And the source even stresses that tire kickers, you know, the looky-loos.
Yeah, neighbors.
And neighbors are welcome because they actually help create that atmosphere of fierce competition and urgency.
You absolutely want that environment where buyers literally see other people interested. They see they're competing.
Yeah.
That fear of loss that someone else might snatch this amazing deal is a super powerful motivator.
So the bottom line for Karen's house, what was the actual outcome using this strategy?
The results were genuinely impressive. Yeah. They got 10 offers in that short window.
10 offers.
Yeah. Now, the highest price offer was $485,000, but the winning offer was actually $475,000.
Why take the lower one?
Because it had exceptionally strong terms, like a super short 7-day financing contingency, meaning the buyer was really confident about their loan.
All right.
No appraisal contingency at all. They wouldn't back out if the bank valued it lower. And a gap clause, meaning they'd cover any difference between appraisal and offer up to a certain amount. Strong terms often beat a slightly higher price.
And wasn't there even a little negotiation drama after that?
There was. A bit of a masterclass moment. The buyer's agent sent over an inspection report with some repair items, standard stuff.
Okay.
But Karen's agent immediately called the other agent and basically threatened to put the house right back on the market. Like, immediately.
Wow, playing hardball.
Totally. And that immediate, tangible fear of loss for the buyer, it worked. Within 10 minutes, they agreed to take the house completely. As is, no repairs.
That's just a textbook example of leveraging that demand you created, isn't it? That urgency and competition really put the seller in the driver's seat.
It absolutely does, yeah.
Yeah.
When demand is that high, the seller really dictates the terms.
So can this strategy work in other situations? Like, why are open houses so much better than individual appointments for this playbook?
Well, individual appointments just don't create that visible urgency, you know, that palpable competition. You need people literally seeing other people looking at the house,
mm-hmm.
feeling that immediate pressure. An appointment at 2 p.m. doesn't see the crowd from 1 p.m.
Makes sense. What about trying to rescue, like, stale listings, homes that have been sitting on the market?
For those, you basically have two main options, according to this strategy. You either have to get so far ahead of the current market, meaning a drastic price drop, to reignite that urgency, or mm-hmm. you pull the home off the market completely. You take the time to change the condition, do the deed clean, the staging, the strategic photos we talked about,
yeah.
and then you relaunch it using this exact 72-hour playbook.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just kind of chip away with small price drops. It doesn't create the same effect.
Yeah, okay. And for vacant homes, or maybe older ones, there was a specific staging technique mentioned, vignetting.
Ah, yeah, vignetting. It's useful for empty places. Instead of fully furnishing every single room, which gets expensive, you focus on putting just key pieces of furniture in the main areas, like the den, the dining room, maybe not every bedroom.
That's the point.
It creates that model home feel. It suggests the potential of the space, gives a sense of scale, without the cost and effort of full staging. It helps buyers visualize.
Got it. And finally, for the real estate agents listening, there was advice about conviction, right?
Yeah, really important. Agents need to confidently present this as a proven marketing strategy to sell your home, not just, as the source kind of colorfully put it, marketing for funsies.
Right.
They need to be able to say, look, we sell more homes this way. We know what we're doing, and be prepared maybe to be agent number three. If the clients absolutely insist on testing the market with a higher price first, with someone else.
And understanding the seller's motivation is key too, right? Like Karen needing every penny of equity for her new house. That makes them stick to the plan.
That conviction is just vital. Agents really need to educate their clients on why this sometimes counterintuitive approach works. Use success stories, explain the psychology. It's crucial.
So we've walked through this really meticulously crafted strategy. It definitely defies a lot of conventional wisdom about selling houses.
It really demonstrates the immense power of solid preparation, really strategic marketing, and just understanding buyer psychology, doesn't it?
Absolutely. This whole deep dive, it really shows how perceived demand, when it's strategically engineered through these specific actions, can just dramatically influence the actual value you get.
Yeah, that perceived value becomes real value in the end.
So, thinking about this, what does it mean for you listening? This whole playbook, it pivots on creating that fear of loss, that perceived urgency. Think about like product launches.
Oh yeah, limited editions, time-sensitive offers.
Exactly. Carefully managed scarcity drives pre-orders, creates buzz. Or even, say, in personal branding, if you demonstrate high demand for your skills, your time, doesn't that elevate your perceived value?
Definitely. Makes people want what others want.
So the question to maybe mull over is, what other areas of life or business could benefit from this insight? How could we apply this principle creating intense, concentrated demand, that fear of missing out, to achieve outcomes beyond just selling a house, maybe in negotiations, career moves, even personal projects?
That's a really interesting thought to chew on, applying FOMO strategically.
Something to think about until our next deep dive.